Thanks, Miguel. I'll be talking about NRE, an end system redundancy elimination service that we built for enterprise network traffic. And yes, we have a bunch of authors with my colleagues, Bhavish and Pushkar from Microsoft Research. We had several PhD students who are interns, Ashok, Atula, and Chitra, and Professor Aditya Akela from University of Wisconsin-Madison, who's their advisor, and Professor George Verghese from UC San Diego, who visited us last summer. So this is the problem setting. If you look at IT admins, how they manage branch offices, about 10 years ago, they were still going and deploying servers in each of the branch offices, which worked well for end users because performance was great, but the administrative and management cost of managing these servers in numerous branch offices was very expensive. So in the recent past, last 5-10 years, they have been consolidating these servers into private data centers for these enterprises. So instead of putting servers in each of the branch offices, these servers get consolidated. And that's great from a management cost savings perspective, but you look at users' performance, users face diminished performance because what used to be local area network traffic now goes over the wide area network, and it's subject to bandwidth and latency constraints there. So what have people done about it? So there's a huge emerging solution in this space called WAN optimizers. And these are middle boxes that you go and deploy at either end of the WAN access link, and they promise that they'll give you the best of both worlds. That is, IT administrators can go ahead and centralize their servers in data centers, and yet users in enterprise sites will get good performance. One of the techniques these WAN optimizers use is what is known as protocol independent redundancy elimination, first proposed by Spring and Weatherall in SIGCOM 2000. And the idea is these boxes keep a cache of packet payloads that they have exchanged in the past, say several gigabytes in size. And when a packet arrives, they quickly look up if the redundant bytes in the packet are in the cache. If so, they replace it with tokens, which the other end then can reconstruct the packet. And this works well because once you deploy these boxes, there's no change in the server and clients, and they get the benefit of performance improvement irrespective of what application they use. And as you can see, the annual revenue in this for this market space is more than $1 billion. And so this is addressing a real need in the enterprise market. But the question we asked was, are middle boxes the right approach for tackling this problem? So let me list a few issues that middle boxes face. First is security. If an enterprise uses IPsec or SSL, HTTPS, these middle boxes really don't perform. So either they pass through the traffic transparently or they require that the keys be shared so that they decrypt, do redundancy elimination, re-encrypt, and send traffic, which is messy. The other problem is, again, middle boxes are designed so that they are at the either end of the WAN access link, which is generally the bottleneck. But increasingly, users are using mobile smartphones to access enterprise servers and enterprise data. And then now the bottleneck sort of suddenly shifts to the 3G cellular link, which may be where the user is accessing the data from. And the middle boxes really don't do anything because they tackle only the WAN access link between the boxes. And finally, of course, there is cost because you've got to buy this box and deploy them. An alternative is to do this end-to-end. So, for example, let's say if a redundancy elimination is done between servers and clients directly, you have lots of benefits. First, you can do this redundancy elimination before encryption. So either IPsec or SSL will not affect the benefits of redundancy elimination. The other is, since it's done end-to-end, you don't really care where the bottleneck link is. It could be in the middle, it could be the wireless link. Since the whole end-to-end path has redundancy elimination, you get the benefits over wireless as well. And if the decoding of redundancy elimination, the other end, is simple enough, you get bandwidth and energy savings. All the bandwidth savings can be energy savings as well. And finally, one of the advantages of doing end-to-end is you could implement this on top of TCP rather than underneath TCP. By putting it on top of TCP, you can Instead of just reducing the size of payload in IP packets, which an IP layer technique would do, here you reduce the number of packets itself. When you reduce packets, number of TCP round trips go down, and for short transactions like HTTP and so on, fewer round trips can save you latency as well. So the problem is not as simple as taking a middle box and moving the functionality to the end host. The challenges are mainly because the resource availability on these end hosts can be one order or several orders of magnitude lower than what is available in the middle boxes. So can an end system really even scale? So just to give you an overview of what we have done, we have designed an end system-based redundancy elimination service that is very lightweight and adaptive. So we have a simple idea of called sample byte fingerprinting, which is very fast and effective. We also optimized the design so that the memory overhead is lower by 33 to 75% compared to prior work. And we have done extensive evaluation of the benefits. We have collected lots of trace data across different enterprise sites on network traffic and looked at how much benefits there are doing it in the middle versus doing it at the end. And we also have a small-scale deployment. So with that as an overview, let me now dig deeper. So I will now look at the details of the NRE system, then talked about our evaluation, which looks at both the costs of doing it in the end system as well as the benefits you can get. And I'll conclude with some related work in summary. So the goals of NRE are somewhat distinct from the goals of a middle box-based redundancy elimination system. And all these are because of the fact that we want to use the end system resources opportunistically. Unlike a middle box, which is dedicated for doing redundancy elimination, we have to be cognizant of the fact that the servers and clients have other purposes that they are used for. So the processing not only has to be fast and lightweight, but has to be tunable based on the server load. So if the application on the server is using more of the CPU, redundancy elimination should throttle down, use less of the CPU, maybe at the cost of bandwidth savings, but without impacting the application performance. So adaptivity is critical for an end host design. And the next requirement is sort of parsimonious memory usage. And here, the issue is by moving the state, the packet caches, to end host, scalability becomes a problem because the server has to maintain packet caches with many of the clients. And so any memory savings that we can do on the server will improve scalability for an end host-based system. And finally, asymmetry is, again, specific to end host because in middle boxes, you have a pair of symmetric boxes, and you don't really care for an asymmetric solution. In our case, given based on our traces that most of the traffic is from the server to client, we really want to optimize for that case. And so we keep client decoding almost trivial. So the server might have to do extra work, but the client decoding is trivial so that we want to be able to run this on smartphones and other resource-constrained devices. So let's look at a little more in detail of how redundancy elimination generally works, and then I'll point out what are the differences with an end-host system that we have done. So at a high level, it's fairly similar whether you do middle boxes or server and clients. We assume there is a packet cache which is maintained in a synchronized way between the server and client. This could be made up of past, say, 10 or 100 megabytes of data that the clients have exchanged in the past from the server to the client. And when a packet arrives at the server, you need to quickly identify repeated content. So this could be as small as 32 bytes, and you want to identify content which is there in this 10 megabyte cache very quickly. And identifying all matches is not practical, so you need a sampling-based approach. So the standard approach here is what you do is you fingerprint the packet, which sort of is a sample of the packet. You have multiple of these fingerprints. So traditionally, Rabin fingerprinting has been what is used for fingerprinting the packet. We use something called sample byte, which is more faster and adaptive. Once you fingerprint the packet, the next thing is to do the matching with the cache. And the way you do it is first you need to match the fingerprints of the packet with the fingerprints of the payload in the cache. So the cache has a bunch of payload and each has fingerprints which you store in a hash table. You do a matching of these fingerprints of the packet to that, which will give you possible locations in the cache which have the same redundant content. At that point, you have multiple choices. You could do what we call a max match, which is sort of a byte-by-byte comparison between bytes in the cache with bytes in your packet and identify redundancy. Or you could do something called a chunk match, where if the server does not even have to store the whole packet cache, it can just have a metadata table. And so you are identifying chunks which are redundant as a whole, rather than doing a byte-by-byte comparison. I won't be talking much about it, but the more details in the paper. But whether you do max match or chunk match, what we do is we always encode these matches in a position length tuple. That is, it's a pointer where the other end now simply has to go into its cache, go to that location identified by the tuple, pull up that length of bytes, and recover the data. So decoding at the client is a very, very simple operation. And whether you do max match or chunk match or any kind of matching the server, we always ensure that the client interface is very, very trivial. So a simple, smartphone can do this because, again, it's just a simple memory lookup. So now let's look at each of this in a little more detail. What are the ways of fingerprinting the packet? And once you fingerprint it, what can we do to enable matching and encoding very efficiently? So this traditional technique is Rabin fingerprinting, which we'll call mod P. Again, you'll see why. So the idea is to compute fingerprint based on content. So you have a packet payload. You take a Rabin hash over a window bytes, and you get a fingerprint. And you slide the window, and you get a numerous set of Rabin hashes. And that's fine. Now you have a bunch of hashes, but you have as many hashes as many bytes in the packet payload. So storing all the hashes is not practical. So you have to sample it. At this point, a typical approach is to sample those fingerprints whose value is 0 mod p. So that's one way to filter out fingerprints. And you select those fingerprints which match that value, and those are your representative fingerprints. The advantage of doing fingerprinting this way is that your fingerprints are only based on the content of the bytes. It is not based on anything else. So let's say you have fingerprints in the cache and fingerprints in the current packet. Small insertions or deletions in the payload will only affect the hash which is right next to it. It will not affect hashes which are further down in the packet payload. So this approach is quite robust to small changes in content, which means you can identify redundancy better, which does very well for compression. But the problem is that this is expensive and not adaptive. By that, what I mean is you have to first generate all the fingerprints for the payload before you can sample a few of them. Maybe instead of sampling, 0 mod 32, you could sample 0 mod 64 and collect a fewer samples, but the work has to be done, which is sort of a constant amount of work. So it's not very tunable, which means your processing is sort of going to be constant, which is against sort of our initial goals where we wanted adaptability to server load. So let's look at a simple scheme, which is fixed, where the idea is just take fingerprints at fixed intervals. So here is a packet payload with 17 bytes. You go around, choose a marker every p bytes, in this case every 4 bytes, and take a simple hash starting at the marker and declare them your fingerprints. Of course, the problem here is that any small insertions and deletions will basically set you off completely from what the fingerprints you have with the fingerprints in the cache, so you'll miss several redundancy elimination opportunities. But the good thing here is it's very fast and tunable. The moment I change P, let's say from 4 to 100, I immediately start skipping a lot of the payload, so I can be very, very fast. So I might miss some opportunities, but at least it has the adaptability built in. So the thing was, these two are got complementary properties, and we sort of said, hey, the fixed has the speed and adaptability. Mod P has robustness. Can we get a combination of the two? And that's how we came up with the sample byte. The idea is quite simple. You have a bunch of, let's say again, packet with payload values which are shown inside the packet. And what we do is this. Assume somebody tells you there is a function f which takes a single byte and returns 1 or 0. And whenever it returns 1, we'll declare that as a marker. If it returns 0, we will not declare that as a marker. So assume there is a function like that. Then what we do is we just look at payloads one byte at a time. When this function is 1, we select that as a marker. At that point, we skip p by 2 bytes. And then we repeat this process. We select our markers. At this point, we take a hash, and we declare them as our fingerprints. So the details on how we compute this function f based on some traces that we train and using a greedy strategy, you can look at the paper for that. But the thing I want to emphasize here is that this is a content-based, albeit, you know, it's just based on a single byte of content. How well does it do compared to, say, mod p? But the other advantage here is the selection criteria are simple, and you can skip as much as you want. So the server load increases, you can skip a lot, otherwise you skip less. So it has the tunability of fixed. So that's fingerprinting. Once you have these fingerprinting algorithms, identifying matching can be done in multiple ways, right? So first step is you compute these fingerprints over fixed windows. Once you do that, you look up the fingerprint in the fingerprint hash table. So you have a cache, you have a fingerprint hash table, which basically lists all the fingerprints in the cache and the location of the fingerprints in the cache. You look it up. You go into the region in the cache. At that point, you do a byte-by-byte comparison of bytes in the cache with bytes in your packet and find the maximal match region, and that's your redundancy. This is the approach used in Spring Weatherall, but the problem here is that the metadata overhead is really high. So in their design, they were choosing about 67% of the cache size was reserved for metadata. And if your cache size is in tens of megabytes, you are pretty much doubling your cache memory usage by doing this, and which will not help scalability when you do an end host-based solution. So in order to optimize that, we looked at several observations. The first was that collisions are not really costly in this approach. Worst case, if a fingerprint collide between the packet and one in the cache, you're doing an extra memory lookup into the cache, and you're finding that those bytes are not really redundant, and you move on. So since the collisions are not really costly, you can do a bunch of optimizations. You can use a very simple hash function for speed. You can overwrite the hash table. You don't need to maintain chains and all that. You don't have to do deletion and all the administrative work for that. So you can be much more efficient. And the second observation is that you don't really need to store the fingerprints themselves. Given that the fact that the hash table is really large, the index of the table is several bytes long. You can sort of implicitly use the table index to represent the fingerprint. So there are more details in the paper, but when you do these optimizations, what we show is that the metadata can be significantly smaller, maybe 6% of the cache size, without affecting your redundancy performance. So with that, let me go into the evaluation, look at costs and benefits of doing redundancy elimination end-to-end. So first is the comparison of the different fingerprinting algorithms. The graph on the left shows the processing speed per core of the fingerprinting of the redundancy elimination, the whole approach, using these different fingerprinting algorithms for different sampling rates on the x-axis. So what you see is, as we expected, mod p does not really benefit from changing the sampling period very much. It's pretty much constant processing speed. Whereas sample byte in purple tracks the adaptability of fixed. So that's the graph on the left. The graph on the right is analogous, which shows the bandwidth savings for different sampling periods. And here you notice that sample byte tracks the bandwidth savings of mod p quite closely, except when the sampling period is very high. At 512 bytes, our approach of using just a single byte of content starts to lose its robustness. And so if you go beyond 512 bytes, a RAB and hash approach may be necessary for maintaining a bandwidth savings. But as long as you are in this region, it's quite robust. And as you can see, compared to a fixed, you get almost a relative improvement of 50% or more in bandwidth savings. So what we saw was that sample byte sort of nicely balances the simplicity of fixed with the robustness of mod p. Memory requirements is a critical issue, because when you move this end-to-end, now you need to have a packet cache per client-server pair. What we show here is, on the left is a CDF of memory requirement at a client, and the right is for the servers. And for clients, the median client over this entire 44-day trace across all these enterprises needed only a maximum cache size of about 60 megabytes, which most enterprise clients have in available. On the server side, the maximum we saw was, you know, the memory requirements went up to a couple of gigabytes, which may be an issue. So either you need to either upgrade the server with a little more memory, or you might have to, throttle the memory usage at the cost of reduced savings. But given memory requirements are, increasingly higher memory requirements are available, we believe this is a reasonable trade-off to get bandwidth savings, and it's not a major cost. We implemented this in the Windows 7 kernel using the Windows Filtering Platform Framework. So basically, you put a module in the kernel, and you can then identify, based on four tuples, whether redundancy elimination is applicable or not. And so it's pretty much transparent to all the applications running on top of any TCP application can transparently benefit from redundancy elimination using this approach. And to show that, you know, it was actually easy to do, we deployed these on desktops of 11 users and collected sort of HTTP traffic and tried to do redundancy elimination over that. And we saw about bandwidth savings of about 30% in our pilot. We also did lots of analysis with the terabytes of data that we collected. I don't want to go into the details, but the numbers to look at, comparing an end host-based system which uses only 1 to 10 megabytes of packet cache per session or per client-server pair, versus a middle box which used about 2 gigabytes of cache plus metadata overhead. You see there is a gap, but it's not dramatic. Middle box is about 39% savings average per site. End host is about 26. But if you actually enhance both middle box and end host with a large file redundancy elimination system like DOT or branch cache or whatever is available, then the gap, in fact, narrows. So if you have large files which you can eliminate redundancy in different ways, the gap is narrow. So in general, redundancy end host-based redundancy elimination gives you about 30% bandwidth savings, and it gives you a significant portion of what a middle box does. Not all of it, but at least a good chunk of it. Finally, we look at energy savings. So one of the goals was asymmetric design, and we wanted to see how much that benefited. So we played traces from a server over Wi-Fi to a mobile smartphone and measured the energy through using a hardware power meter. And we played different traces, comparing no compression, zlib is known to be lightweight for decompression, so that's why we picked that, and NRE. And you look at zlib, it works well if you look at chunk sizes of 32 kilobytes or, in general, 4 kilobytes or larger. But if you do it on a packet-by-packet basis, you may get bandwidth savings, but you may pay in terms of increased energy consumption. So zlib is good if you have chunks which are reasonably large. Otherwise, you might not get energy savings. Whereas NRE, you get both bandwidth savings and energy savings, which are equivalent. So there's a bunch of related work in this area, static content, you know, client and server, peer-to-peer. There's lots of work there. And also, interestingly, redundancy elimination is being used in new architectures as part of routers in an internet or as part of nodes in a wireless mesh network. So it's getting more and more applicable in a variety of scenarios. So I'll just conclude since Miguel is here. Just main summary is end host based redundancy elimination is a promising alternative to WAN optimizers. Thank you.